Okay, so it's February. What's the date? February 23rd, 2025, and this is one of our regular Pulp and Richmond PST Work Sunday workshops. And today we will be talking at last about the long-awaited topic of green tar chanting. We've done a series of workshops. I thought we might do all of these topics in one session, and it took three. First one was general sort of what chanting means, why we chant, which we will review very briefly today. And Chenrezig, we talked about Chenrezig, like just the practice of Chenrezig, what it means, and went over the text a bit. And then the second one, we ended up spending the whole time talking about chanting protocol, group chanting protocol, which is actually a very important topic. And then so now we're on Green Tara. So what we'll do is we'll very briefly review both of the previous workshops for just a couple of minutes, and then we'll jump in to Green Tara. So let's first take a moment to just let our awareness settle a bit into the present moment. And that could mean something different for each one of us. There's no right way to do that or no right place to land. So I like to start by first just letting it happen. Like, just what happens if I just sit and be with my experience for a moment? And we don't have to be doing anything. We're just letting go of doing anything and just being with whatever. And the whatever constantly changes. We might be noticing sound, or we might be noticing a visual phenomenon, or we might be caught up in a thought, and all of that changes constantly. And then I might notice my feet on the ground and my contact with my seat, just being sort of grounded where I am in the present moment as my experience unfolds naturally. And then let myself notice this vastness of the space all around me in all directions, which is very actually relaxing. That helps us relax into the present moment. It's just very inconceivably vast and spacious. Check in with the senses. I can see there are sounds or absence of sounds, tactile sensations. Those are the three main ones when we're doing formal practice or studying together. Internal and external sensations. And then there's just the flow of our experience, the sense perceptions, the thoughts and emotions. Always changing, and we're just witnessing it. And then we could take a moment to ask who's noticing this experience, who's witnessing it. And for me, that dissolves the barrier a little bit between myself and what I think of as my experience, because I am part of my experience. It's all one thing. In fact, Ringu Tulku says in Path to Buddhahood, something very close to the experiencer is the experience. There's actually no difference. And just thinking that thought and then letting go of it for me kind of opens up everything. So I'll be back in a minute. I'm just closing my shade, which is very bright. So anytime we're just sitting, and we could be in a Dharma workshop, or we could be doing a chanting practice, or we could be washing dishes, we can tune in. We can just tune in to the present moment in this way. Just be with our experience. Even momentarily really helps. It breaks the habit. It interrupts, I won't say breaks, it interrupts the habit of being caught up in our experience. It's like stepping out into the space in which the experience is taking place. And it is very freeing. In the end, that is freedom, is not being caught up in our experience, but just being with it, not being buffeted around by it, even though it could be very buffeting experience. We can sort of disidentify that little bit with it, being it, but also having some distance. So first, oh, and I wanted to say, like, why do I call these workshops? We might have talked about this a bit before. Why do I not call these teachings? Sometimes I do end up just talking a lot. But for me, workshop is more what I'm going for. You know, the point of workshop is not information. There might be information in it, but the Dharma path, the path of Dharma study can really feel like just gathering a lot of information. And it's useful, but it's not going to get us there. Like just relating to it as information. So my aspiration is that the workshops be more informal. They'd be more experiential, not just taking in a bunch of information, and that they'd be more interactive than a teaching might be. And that said, we have a procedure. I think PST has recently sort of formalized this, that even though I want the workshops to be experiential, I do have some things to say and a sort of a sequence of things to do. So I'll let you know. And if anybody has any really pressing thing that they would like to say, you can raise your hand. Easiest to see if you raise your on-screen hand, which if you're on Zoom, obviously can't do that at PST, so you can raise your regular hand. But for those online, it's really easy to see you. If you go to reactions at the bottom of your screen, it says react. And oh, I don't know what yours says, because mine as a host, a co-host, has different options, but I think there's a raise hand option there. And if not, just wave your hand. And I might not call on you immediately. You know, I might be finishing up a thought or something, but someone at PST will be keeping a record of who's got their hand up. Scott and Stephanie, somebody there, multiple people. And everybody will be called on in the order in which their hand was noticed. It might not be the same as the order in which your hand was raised, but the order in which your hand is noticed. And so everybody will get a chance to speak. And soon I'm going to ask for, you know, everybody's thoughts on Green Tara, actually. But first, I just wanted to very quickly sort of glide through what I've said before about why we do chanting practice, because sometimes we forget, I think. You know, everything can just become kind of rote and we don't really think about why we're doing it. But so in the first workshop in this series, what I said was that the main practice is always waking up to our true nature and the nature of our experience. That is the point of the path. And when we're fully awakened to that, to how things truly are in their essence, that's Buddhahood. When we operate from that, in our toolkit for doing that, we have shamatha meditation, which is training our attention to be with an object and ultimately to be with our experience, with our awareness. We have vipassana, which is the next step. I'm calling it next level meditation these days, where we use that skill to look at the actual nature of our own mind, the nature of our experience, the nature of ourself, the nature of our mind. And then the third thing in the toolbox in the Vajrayana is these chanting practices called sadhanas. It's the Sanskrit word. Chanting practices like Chenrezig and Green Tara and Medicine Buddha and Mahakala and so forth. And what kind of role do they play? Well, when Kala Rinpoche first came to the West back in the 1970s, early 1970s, 74, I think, he thought that we needed an active practice. Like people in the West were kind of restless, were used to doing things, to being active. And he thought an active practice would be sort of easier for us to start with than just sitting. Trungpa Rinpoche had people just sit for hours and hours, which was also a good path. But Kala Rinpoche gave us chanting practices. He gave us Chenrezig because it engages body, speech, and mind. And what I have found recently is that, and I said this in the first workshop, is that when I sit down to meditate, it can be a bit, there is a period of restlessness. I've worked through that a lot over many, many years, but still it takes a little while for the mind to settle down and be like, okay, now I'm ready to just look at my experience. And for me, some chanting practice can be a very good bridge there because it gives you something to do. So that impulse to like, I want to be up and doing something can sort of be channeled into like you're chanting and you're visualizing. And by the time you get through that practice, you're like settled, at least for me. Again, speaking for myself, that really helps me settle down. And then I'm ready to just sit for a while. So I'm finding that a really handy thing to realize. So what's the other thing I wanted to say about that? I guess that's it. It is all of our practice is the same, whatever form it takes, in that it is helping us to focus on our experience and look at the nature of it, the actual nature of it. So when we do chanting practice, it's not separate from doing shamatha and vipassana meditation. Shamatha in doing, oh, maybe I wrote this down. Right. Okay, so I'm going to read from my notes from the first workshop on this. As we chant Tara or Chenrezig or any other practice, it's an essential part of the practice to practice whatever level of meditation we're working with at the same time. So shamatha means we pay attention to the meaning of the practice and everything we're doing as part of the practice without thinking about something else. So it's just the same process as shamatha. Our mind will wander. We will be thinking about what's for lunch. And when we realize that's happening, as we're chanting, because we're very, our mind can do multiple things at the same time. So we're chanting that practice. We might even be visualizing Tara to some extent, but our mind is also like part of our mind is also like, what's for lunch today? Or, why did that person say that thing to me? Or whatever. And so when we notice that's called distraction. And when we notice that, we can just let go of that. Go back to, what we're actually mean to be focusing on. So that's all taking place as we're doing any chanting practice, is this practice of shamatha, of bringing our attention back again and again, as we need to, whenever we get distracted. And then how does vipassana play out? Oh, I'll just read it from here. Vipassana means we recognize the dreamlike nature of the visualization and the other elements of the practice, even as we're chanting it. We recognize that the world we're creating and envisioning, because in Chenrezig and Tara and other practices, we're actually in a Buddha realm as we do it, as we chant it. So we recognize that the world we're creating and envisioning is not solid and real. And we know that because we know we made it up. And that builds a bridge to recognizing that about like our whole world, like which, when we're not practicing formally, we're doing other things, we're talking to people and stuff, but we're also, creating, we're doing all that within our perception of what that world is, our preconceptions and our opinions and so on and so forth. So we ultimately want to recognize that that too is dreamlike and not solid and, to some extent imagined or made up. But we can do it really easily through a chanting practice. We know we're making it up. So it fulfills that function. That is the vipassana aspect, the looking at the mind aspect is, oh, this is only happening in my mind. This Tara realm. And the Tara is, and Tara being present. And by doing that, I got ahead of myself. It's easier to apply that same view to the ordinary world we inhabit when we're not doing Tara or Chenrezig. So I wrote this about Chenrezig, but I'm going to say Tara this time, the next section. Tara is a creation and completion practice, also known as a development and a completion practice. Oh, development and yeah, completion practice, in which we mentally create a different reality and inhabit it for the duration of the practice. So we're going to be doing that when we do Tara. We're creating a sacred world. We're peeling away like our let's see, hallucinatory, delusory, you know, what we think of as reality. We're peeling that away to see the sacred world underneath it. We're tuning into a different aspect of our reality that we don't normally even realize is there. So we mentally create a different reality and inhabit it for the duration of the practice until we dissolve it at the end. So creation is imagining it all, and then completion is dissolving it. And we realizing that we have the power to do that. It is an enlightened reality, a pure land, a Buddha field, and the activity we do within the practice is the enlightened activity of freeing beings from suffering, true of Chenrezig and Green Tara. As we do it, we take the perspective of believing it's really possible and really happening. And that's an important aspect to it, is to realize that it's just as real as what we normally perceive as real. It's really real. We really are Tara. Tara is really present. I really am in a Buddha realm right now. And then as we chant the mantra, we are really freeing beings from suffering. And at the end, we dissolve the visualization and maybe experience a moment of ultimate reality. It creates a gap. Like when you create, go to all this trouble of creating this visualized world, this visualized sacred Buddha realm that we're in, and ourself as Tara or Tara as present, whatever. Then we're actually in that. We really buy into it. Like, this is my reality. I am Tara. And then we dissolve it. There's a gap, it creates a gap, just like a sneeze, just like Lily being upside down. It creates a gap in our experience. And through that gap, we can directly see the nature of reality. We don't have to conceptualize it. We tend to not think things are real or done or really happening unless we have, it fits into a conceptual framework. But that is the whole point of the nature of reality, is it does not fit into a conceptual framework. Our conceptual framework has disappeared momentarily, in this case, because we've dissolved it. And all we have to do is be there. We don't have to figure it out. We don't even have to recognize it as such. It's just letting go of the need to conceptualize our experience for that moment and be with that experience as it's happening. And it tends to be very fleeting. And we have that all the time. Like, once you sort of understand that, and if you can tune into your experience, you can see it happening many, many times throughout the day, that there's a gap. And like, just suddenly nothing happening for even for a split second. And we don't have to conceptualize it. I think that's where a lot of us feel like it's not happening for us. Or it's not going to happen for us. We're never going to be able to do this thing because success means fitting it into a conceptual framework and being able to put our experience into words to understand what's happening. So that's what we let go of. We can let go of that as we're doing Tara, but especially at the dissolution moment in Tara or Chenrezig, just be with that. Let it be nothing. For a moment. And nothing doesn't necessarily mean, like, we're, you know, we dissolved the Tara realm and the presence of Tara and ourself as Tara, and we're looking at like our screen, you know, if it's a Thursday night. You know, there it's not like there's nothing there, but the conceptuality that gives conceptual meaning and context to our experience is absent for a moment. And we just allow that to be. And that is that moment that Trungpa Rinpoche was talking about in my favorite quote from Trungpa Rinpoche, that it's like being in free fall without a parachute. It feels like that because there's no framework, there's no scaffolding. It's just like you're in that vast, inconceivable, spacious awareness. And he said, the good news, the bad news is, oh, right, you don't have a parachute. The bad news is that you're in free fall without a parachute. And the good news is there's no ground. So it's not going to hurt you. You're not going to like go splat. There's nothing to splat onto. So you can just appreciate that moment and no worries, no worries. You can't make it last long. Like, you're not going to be stuck there. because our habit of conceptuality is so strong that it's a miracle if we can even notice for a split second that it's not there. And our ground is going to be right back, and our parachute is going to be right back. The parachute's going to be there, before we can even think there's no parachute. And as soon as we think there's no parachute and there's no ground, like that's conceptuality, and that particular experience is over. And then I digress a little bit, but then so the gap is what Mingyur Rinpoche calls horizontal liberation. And but all the other times, it's still there. It's exactly the same. There's, the basis, the essence of our experience is non-conceptual, and it permeates every conceptual experience that we have. And we can learn to recognize that too. And then we're in it all the time. And we forget. That's distraction. That's the real distraction, is that we forget that. And we're going to talk about that more when we talk about embodying the three kayas, which is a workshop that's upcoming at some point. But anyway, so that's why we do these practices. So in the second workshop, and we're going to get to Tara and open up the floor in just a minute. Do we need in the second workshop, we ended up talking about group chanting protocol. That was the topic. Do we need to review any of that, or is everything going splendidly? I think the biggest, the most important protocol in group chanting is always follow the umze. Always be able to hear the person who's leading the chanting, and always follow them. Whatever they're doing, if they lead you into error, unless it's fatal error, you just go with it because it will correct itself. Like, you don't have to fix what the umze is doing. If the umze skips an entire section, then sometimes we just fall silent, and then the umze figures it out and goes back. Never known that not to happen. And it happened even with Lama Norla. He would skip a section and everybody would just stop chanting because it's like, we're lost. And then he would figure it out. So, but always follow those. And I think the biggest, what I've experienced at the monastery and at, PST, just at different times, and also in New Hampshire, where I also have a Sangha, people think that the point of chanting is to be heard. We want our voice to be heard. And there's a very fine line, because we were always encouraged to chant loudly, like to be vocal, like not to chant in a little whisper, but to actually get your voice into it. But there's a very fine line between you loud enough and too loud. So you want to always be on the not so loud side of that line. It's just that the rule of thumb is, make sure you can hear the umze, the person leading the chanting. Always make sure you can hear them. Don't overpower them. And it happens quite frequently that sometimes people come in and they don't, I don't know, they think they're doing that maybe, but they're actually so loud that nobody can hear the umze. And they're not, like, they're not ready to be an umze yet, and everything gets kind of messed up. It happens at the monastery. So, it can happen anywhere. And it corrects itself. So we can also be patient with that process. But always try to hear the umze and make sure you're following the umze. Anything else that we need to say about that? PST or anybody else? Dave also leads chanting, but you're on Zoom, right? Your chanting is on Zoom. So only one voice is being heard anyway, only the umze. PST, anything we need to talk about there, or we're ready for Tara? Okay, great. Great. Hi, Lauren. Okay, so next thing is, we're gonna do a little interactive thing here. If people want to, we'll see. And I'm just wondering, before we talk about the practice of green Tara, a lot of you have practiced Tara, are like regular practitioners of Tara. Some of you have practiced Tara for 40 years, like me. And I wonder, like, both in your formal practice and in your daily life, how does Tara come into your life? Like, how do you think about Tara? What does Tara mean to you? And I'm really interested in anything anybody wants to share about that. No one needs to share. It's fine if you don't, but if anybody has anything they'd like to say about it, I'd love to hear it. Both as like there's two aspects to it. There's being a recipient, like when you're in trouble, do you call on Tara? And what do you feel happens, if anything? Is it helpful in any way? And as a Tara, we're all Tara, and when we do the practice of Tara, we develop our Tara skill. And so how do we manifest that in the world? Do we manifest that in the world? Like, how do we relate to this whole thing? So we've got Brooke first.
I think what I find myself doing, and I wish I could do it more often, but is find myself in situations that might be difficult or, anxiety producing, and kind of thinking of, while I know it's within myself, it's kind of, like, please guide me, or please remove the obstacles that are keeping me from moving forward.
Yeah. And does that help? Did you feel that that's a helpful thing?
To an extent,
Yeah.
if I can get myself to the point where I'm actually able to do that,
Yeah. That's the thing.
yes.
Yeah.
There's
Remembering.
at some point, there's a point of no return, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Remembering to call upon Tara. That's the thing. There's Tara is always there. Tara as an external being, or Tara as our internal resources. Tara is always accessible to us, but the trick is, just like with meditation, the trick is to tune in, like to remember that. Dan, you're muted.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. What I found, especially recently, is that when I do like a Tara, even if I just do the mantra, if I'm in a difficult situation or if I'm in a lot of pain or something's going on, which is difficult, it gives me just enough space to slow my mind down. And that allows me to get some patience, which allows me to focus on compassion. And then you get that little cycle going,
Right.
where it kind of like the, if you give yourself enough space, you give yourself that patience, that can give you enough time to sort of engage that compassion for you or other people. And then it sort of just continues to cycle through. Even if you're not doing the formal practice, even if you can just do the mantra. And there were a lot of situations, for me recently, where there was no way I could do a formal practice, because it just wasn't going to happen. But just even just doing the mantra, can give you just enough space to engage the other aspects of Buddha nature, the compassion, the patience, and if you just kind of let it will sort of cycle through and reinforce each other. And I'm not sure I'm making any sense, but it did help me. Or it has helped me.
I think it's very well said, Dan. Thank you. And I think that is also the obstacle. I think you've hit upon the obstacle to remembering to engage with Tara when we're in distress, is that the distress kind of overwhelms us, like we're stuck in the distress or the pain or whatever. And so just to remember Tara opens it up. That's how I would say it for myself. I see Bonnie's hand. PST, I'm not looking, I'm not necessarily noticing if there's anybody at PST. We're okay? Okay. Okay, Bonnie, you're on.
Okay. Besides, trying to have it in the back of my mind all day, impermanence and other aspects of Buddhism that might come up to, sort of calm me down as I'm in conversations and things. But I also have alarms on my phone at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. And so I have, a series of Tara prayer, Chenrezig, the refuge prayer in the morning, and things like that that I go through twice a day.
Right. Wonderful. So you have some built-in cues to remember to connect with your
Yeah.
practice, basically. Exactly.
Yeah, and then the text is in the reminder, you know, that I can use, or a link to a video, not a video, but an audio, you know, of the prayer
Yeah,
that I
nice.
can listen to that's very calming, especially before I go to sleep at night.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, PST.
It's Jean here. I found, what each person said, is kind of like what I would say if I were building up to saying what I'm going to say, which is, saying the mantra of Green Tara, Om Tara Tatari Turiya Soha. It doesn't, provide like a magic fix for whatever trouble I might be in at the moment, but it does kind of distract me a little bit from my own, emotions, like the emotional turmoil. And I think over time, it's kind of built so it becomes a little more mindful too. It affords me a little mindfulness, but I think that's happened like over trying to do that a lot. Just saying the mantra if I'm in an argument or it's usually about anger. If I feel myself getting angry, if I say the mantra over time, it's kind of built up to be a stronger reminder to try to cool down before saying something that'll get me in trouble. And I also tend to think of Tara as helpful to people in who have legal troubles. I don't know where that comes from, but whenever I know someone who's in some kind of legal situation, I think of Green Tara and I pray to Green
Yeah,
Tara for them.
I think Tara is perfect for that. It's one of her functions. Well, thank you for sharing that. About it, not the mantra not being a magical fix. I wonder. I think there might be something to that too. I think there is something. But I agree with you. It's not like we can't just rely on the mantra and that like makes everything go away. But I think it adds a power. The power to it, some sort of non-conceptual power to it. Okay, somebody else at PST? I'm saying I was hoping you'd speak up.
I love Tara so much. It's not a secret. So I was like writing down, trying to write down all of the things I'd love to say. I wanted to share a story that happened to me a couple years ago. So I was a full-time nanny for this little 1.5-year-old child.
I
She was,
remember her. We met her
yes, that's right.
during Temple Lekshe's cymbals lesson or something, drum
Yeah,
lesson.
that's right. I forgot about that. Thank you. Yes, Harper. She came.
Harper,
Yes, some good, I guess some good karma to have shown up on a day like that. But anyway, so I would take her for a walk every day. So we went to the park. We were at the VMFA here in Richmond. And I'm not saying anything that the mothers in the room don't understand, but when you're taking care of a young kid like that and you're doing all the things at once and you're trying to make sure that they're not getting into trouble, it can get really hard. And so we were, I think it was snack time, right? So I'm getting us something for her to eat. And all of a sudden, we're around these some big trees on the lawn there at VMFA. And one of these squirrels starts approaching us. And I was like, oh, hey, little squirrel. Like when I see animals, normally I'm open to them, like I feed them, whatever. But you kind of sometimes can know when there's a little danger lurking. So this gave me an eerie vibe. I was like, you're getting a little too close for comfort, Mr. Squirrel. So he keeps on coming closer. And at this point I was like, oh no. And I think I was like in the middle maybe of opening something for her. And so I wasn't right beside Harper. Anyways, I was like, oh no. Like I got very scared that this squirrel was not backing off, was coming too close. And so I started saying Tara mantras. And I was like, Tara, please help me. Om Tari Tu Tari Turusa. And I just started, I really, really, with all of my heart called on Tara because it was getting scary. And all of a sudden, out like from nowhere, a woman who actually lives in Charlottesville, who I had happened to like reconnect with like a week or two earlier, somehow was happening to be in Richmond that day to go to the VMFA. And she sees me in this precarious situation, and she comes and she scoops Harper up. And like, I didn't even know that she was on the property at the time. There's no reason why she should have been in Richmond that day, right? Like, so many factors that just didn't make sense in lots of ways, but in another way makes beautiful, harmonious sense. And then later that day, so she came and helped, and everything was fine, and I thanked her profusely. And then later on that same trip, I ran into another friend of mine who's an artist in town who happens to have a Tara tattoo on her arm. So it was just like, you know, I felt completely held by Tara. And I in my own life, like with my, like with mental health struggles, depression, anxiety, you know, I have used Tara practice to lean on and to really like kind of train myself when I feel like I'm in a depressive episode or state. I'll go to Tara and I will do her practice and just be like, I give it all. And it's been really hard in many ways, or like at the beginning particularly. But now that I have much more of a rhythm and a relationship with Tara, I feel like it's another, tool, I guess we could say.
Well, that's a great story, Stephanie. Because, you know, we are Tara and everybody else is Tara too. So our calling out to Tara maybe connects with somebody else's Tara nature. You know, is like one way to look at it. So the Tara in them, here's the Tara. Here's you calling for Tara. Because we're all Tara. Like anybody could be Tara in that moment. What a wonderful story. That was somebody that you knew too.
Yes, and what you just said, Lama, like that's another thing that I wrote down, is like, you're not alone. Because I feel like when I'm in those states of fear and anxiety and challenging, disturbing emotions, you know, my confusion is such that I think I'm alone, but Tara's nature and the reality is we are all interconnected. We are all like together in the sacred web of what is true. So yeah. And like what she says, clad in splendid, joyous armor, or vanquish foes with joyful dancing. I don't know. It's just like all these beautiful ways that we remember we are connected and we help each other and we are mirrors of each other, all of that.
Beautifully said. Thank you. Anybody else want to share anything about how you relate to Tara in your life? I'll share just a quick anecdote from, I think this was somebody in our New Hampshire Sangha like 20 years ago. I don't even know if Tara was like her main practice, but she practiced with us. She was a practitioner. And she had to go for an MRI one day. And she has claustrophobia, and she was in that tube and just panicking. And she said she didn't even think of Tara. Tara just appeared like right in front of her face. And she was fine after that. Tara just stayed with her for the MRI. Yes, Dave.
That reminds me, I wasn't going to say anything because I've had various things at different times, but I did. I also have bad claustrophobia, and I didn't realize that being in an MRI would trigger it so profoundly. And I did like some deep breathing, and like I actually got out of the tube one time. Like first I was like, I can't do this, get me out of here, you know. And then I was like talking with this nurse who's used to trying to talk people back into it, you know. And so we're going and going, and I just did like different, like a deep breathing technique to relax me, and did some other stuff. But I also was just like, before I got into that, I was just chanting, you know, doing Tara mantras, and, you know, just like kind of clenching my teeth and all. So it was like, oh, I'm under, but that did work. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Wonderful. Yes, Lauren, I thought I saw your hand up. Is that you?
Yeah, that was me. So I have, well, I will say green Tara mantras when I hear an ambulance, because I grew up Catholic, so I used to do like the sign of the cross. So I do that, and then I do my green Taras. And I also will have green Tara come to me very strongly. I will notice colors, and then I feel like she is just fills up the room and is right there in front of me. I also had an MRI situation like that. There was another time I went to my friend who also practices Eastern medicine, and I was laying there doing a deep meditation, and I just felt her like take over the whole room and giving me love and love to everyone else and helping them with their pain. And I felt like this really tense moment, and then he came over and touched my forehead right here, and I just like started crying. And he practices Zen Buddhism, and I didn't know that at the time. He was like, I really feel like this might sound weird, but Green Tara was with you. And I was like, what? Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel like she comes to me when I least expect it.
Wow. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I think this is a really good use of our time. Just tuning into, you know, how Tara manifests in our own lives and sharing that with each other. I think it really helps to bring the practice to life, because it can just feel like just sitting and chanting and making yourself remember like what Tara looks like. But it's really, it's much more alive than that, I think. Tara is really alive in all of us. And, you know, I mean, so much of life obscures that. But more and more we develop the habit of connecting with it. And then Tara can pop up when you don't even feel like you summoned Tara, but you realize that she's just there. Yes, Curtis, and then I think, is that the right order? PST, Stacker? Okay, Curtis, and then PST.
Yeah, just to, can you hear me? Is my microphone
yes,
working?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Just to pile on the MRI stories. because I've had at least three full body MRIs where you're in there for half an hour or longer. And for me, and so I have a Tara sadhana from a Nyingma tradition, but it, what I found, I was really glad that I had the whole thing memorized. so I could do it in there, and something that I could concentrate my mind on. I knew, you know, that it would just hold my mind while I was in there. I don't have extreme claustrophobia, but like, you don't have to have extreme claustrophobia when you're in one of those MRI tubes for, you know,
for half an hour
or
yeah.
45 minutes.
Hard.
Yeah,
that'll be hard for anybody, I think.
Yeah, so yeah. Just the practice of memorization, I was so glad that I had done that.
Yeah, thanks for that plug for memorization, because I love to memorize practices and be able to just do them. Like, maybe it's a short bit, but have things like that ready. Sometimes because my mind is busy with thoughts, and you can sort of, you can change the channel, as Mingyur Rinpoche says, to something that you can just chant, some practice that you can do. Okay, PST again. No? Oh, no PST. Okay. Oh. Okay. Anybody else? We do have other things we can talk about, but I wanted to give plenty of space for this sharing. Okay. And if anybody thinks of anything later, you can raise your hand. Okay, let's see what's next on the agenda. Okay, right. I was gonna say a couple of things, but I think they've been covered at this point. Okay, so I wanted to just read Lama Tsering, who some of you know from the monastery, he's doing a series. I don't know if there's ever been a second teaching in it, but last October I was at a teaching he gave. I was on Zoom it was on actually a book, The Instructions of Gampopa being one of my heroes in the lineage. But he started off saying that someone had asked him to talk about the life of Green Tara, like, you know, how Green Tara came about. And so he spent the first like 10 minutes talking about Green Tara. And I pulled out my notes, and like half of them are illegible. So instead, I'm going to read a little bit about where Tara comes from Bokar Rinpoche's book, Green Tara, The Feminine Divine. See, translation, I could say some things about the translation, but we don't need to worry about that. Okay, so in the book, this is on page 19, and the heading, the translation is a bit funny, and it's also really old. This is from the 70s, I think. It could be a little bit later. It doesn't say. Oh, no, it does. 1999. Wow, surprisingly late. Anyway, the heading on this little biography of Tara is called From Woman to Deity. Not sure there's a distinction to be made there, any distinction to be made there whatsoever. The woman, man, deity, not deity, like there's no distinctions like that in ultimate reality. However, we may manifest in relative reality, and our how we see our relative reality is going to shift. You know, it's what we see is not always the way things are, and the more we practice, the more sort of dreamlike and fluid it all becomes. But then it's the 1999 version. So I'm just going to read a little bit of this. So Bhokar Rinpoche says, even if it's, oh wait, I'm not going to read that part. Her story began, okay, oh, according to stories of this pedagogical truth, meaning like relative reality of Tara, as opposed to ultimate reality of Tara, known through the work of Taranatha, who is a wonderful Jonang teacher, wrote some books that we still study today. Let's see, according to the stories, Taranatha, a 16th century lama of great realization and scholarship, Tara was a woman before becoming a deity. Her story began incalculable ages ago in a world called Multicolored Light. The worlds then had lovely names. Multicolored Light, where the drum sound Buddha dwelled. Buddhas also have very interesting names. There's many, many, many Buddhas. One of the king's daughters, so she's a princess, one of the king's daughters at this time, called Wisdom Moon, or Moon of Wisdom, that was her name, Yeshidawa, Moon of Wisdom, possessed great faith and devotion to this Buddha, drum sound Buddha. For many years, she made immense offerings to this Buddha and his entourage of monks. So first of all, she has a lot of faith. She's just naturally born with a lot of faith in this Buddha. And then she follows through on the faith by paying homage and presumably doing practice and making offerings to the Buddha and to the monks in his monastery or in his entourage. And one day she decided to take the Bodhisattva vow in the presence of the Buddha drum sound, that is to promise to attain awakening to benefit beings in infinite ways. The monks rejoiced greatly at her decision, and considering that she would accumulate great merit by this activity, advised her to pray in order to obtain in a future life the body of a man, because in old Tibet, like not only was like a man's body considered more valuable, like it was really believed that women could not attain awakening. Like it really was true because women had no access to practice. You know, women were very subservient in old Tibetan culture. And things are changing there just as they have changed here, because it was like that, you know, here too. It's been like that here in the Western world. Anyway, and what actually, this differs a little bit from how Lama Tsering explained it. He said that the monks prayed for her to attain a male body immediately, like without having to wait for death and rebirth, but may she just now manifest as a man. And she said, wait a minute. So that's not exactly what the text says. The monks rejoiced greatly at her decision and advised her to pray in order to obtain in a future life the body of a man. This would allow her to benefit beings and the Dharma better than in a female existence. Wisdom Moon, distressed by their narrowness of mind, answered them from the point of view of the ultimate nature of all things. And this touches upon, what was it, from woman to deity. Here, no man, no woman, no I, no individual, no categories. Man or woman, both in quotes, are only denominations created by confusion of deluded minds in this world. It says perverse minds, but that's a bad translation. So I'm going to say deluded minds in this world. She added that there were many who followed the path in a man's body and few in a woman's body. Women did not have the opportunity to practice the Dharma. And that's been true up until modern times, like much more than even in the West. In fact, Lama Norla, I know, you know, Lama Norla established the first monastic college for women in Tibet back in 2000. First time women had access to that kind of high level of study. And many, many teachers now make a point of building monasteries for women, for nuns. The nuns are now very, there's a lot of opportunities to follow the Dharma for women in Tibet now. But it has not always been the case, certainly not in whatever century this was. So she added, right, that there were many who followed the path in a man's body, few in a woman's body. As for myself, she said, as long as samsara is not emptied, I will benefit beings appearing in a female body. Such was her promise. And she had so much merit. And obviously she, you know, she had a lot of merit just to be reborn as the king's daughter and as a, you know, to have a Buddha that handy that she could relate to directly. She already had a lot of merit. I remember in my three-year retreat, one person asked the Lama if we could make the same vow. And he said, we didn't have that kind of control yet. Like Yeshe Dawa had that kind of control. Like she made the vow and she could just keep being reborn in a female body. For us, it can be an aspiration. We can make the aspiration, but we have to really practice in order to, when we die, actually have control over how we're going to be reborn in our next life. But she could really do it. So her practice then allowed her to realize ultimate truth. Having become a goddess or a divine, you know, realized being, she has placed millions of beings on the path of awakening each day. So, as I took a workshop with Robert Thurman back when he wasn't very well known, it would have been like, I think it was 1982. He gave this series of workshops in New York City at the New School. And there were like 20 people in each one. And the first one was on Chenrezig, the second was on Green Tara, and the third one was on Mahakala. He got into trouble with the Mahakala one. It was quite weird, but the Chenrezig and Tara went really well. And he said, she is said to liberate billions of beings before breakfast. And I've always remembered that. I don't know if he made that up or if that's, because it seems like it's a thing. Like she's said to be just quick, like she's right there. You call on Tara, she's right there. Like that's the promise, she's there. Whether we perceive that or not, who knows? But you know, if with faith you call upon Tara, it is said that she really is there. So I just want to add from Lama Tsering that he talked about the first line of the praises, which I have like in the text, in the old sadhana text. Is on page 6. The very first line of the praises is, where is it? Oh, Chatsal Turi Nyurma Pamo. Like that's her. That is Tara. Like that is the encapsulation of Tara's qualities. So Chatsal means I praise or I bow down to. And Chatsal Turi Nyurma Pamo. Tare is an epithet. That's just her name, Tara Drolma in Tibetan. It means the liberator. So her name, Drolma in Tibetan, Tara in Tibetan is Drolma. And it means the liberator, the one who liberates. It means the one who liberates in a female body. That's the ma, as opposed to a pa, Drolma. So the female liberator. But then her other qualities, particular qualities, are Nyurma, which means quick or swift. You know, Chenrezig has very similar qualities, but he's just more like laid back. You know, he's just doing it, which is also a very beautiful quality. Just, you know, consistently liberating beings from suffering. Like that's what he does. But Tara is the one, like you need help right now. She's fast. I'm not saying it wouldn't work for Chenrezig because there's no distinction, right? It's all the same thing. But we have these distinctions because, like, as sentient beings, we feel we have different needs at different times. And so there's a time to call on Chenrezig, there's a time to call on Tara, there's a time to call on Medicine Buddha, but it's all the same energy. There's no difference between any of them, which is why you could just do one practice. You could just do Tara. It would cover everything. You're sick. Do Tara. You know, you're having obstacles, do Tara. It's all the same energy. You're having obstacles, call in Medicine Buddha. Doesn't matter. But she's known for being quick. And so when you know that about her, you know, I need help right now. Tara, help me. Or she just appears, like you didn't even get there to calling on Tara, but there she is in your MRI machine. So that's, so she's liberates, she's quick, and she's a pomo, which means a hero or a heroine. And what Lama Tsering said of heroine, what it means is that she is not afraid of hardship on behalf of benefiting beings. Like, I think of myself, like, it's a lot of trouble to help beings. Like, you know, I mean, people need us all the time, right? They need for us to do this thing for them. They need us to cover for them on this shift. You know, those are things that we don't necessarily want to do. And so sometimes we might hesitate or just like, oh, sorry, I can't do that today. Not Tara. Like, no hardship is too much for Tara. She didn't even think in terms of that. Like, oh, this is a lot of trouble and I'd really rather be doing this other thing, or this other thing is just more important right now. You know, they can wait. She's just there. So anyway, those are just some of her qualities. But those are really key ones. She liberates, she frees beings, she does it quickly, and she'll overcome any obstacle to do it. Like, she's just gonna do it no matter what. And those are all qualities we can strive for. Those are Tara qualities. If we want to manifest Tara more and more, we can think in those terms. Like, oh, if somebody needs help right now, Zoom, I'm there. Oh, somebody needs help, and man, that's a lot of trouble, and I just don't have that energy today. No, I'm gonna just do it to the best of our capacity. Sony Rinpoche, one of my very favorite teachers, says we help, and especially talking about compassion, because he often gets a question about compassion burnout. Like, you know, I've just been helping people and helping people, and then there's all these people suffering here and all these people suffering here, and I just can't, like, it's just too much. And he calls that compassion burnout. What was I going to say about that? Anybody know? anyway, Tara never gets compassion burnout. I'll just leave it at that until, like, whatever I was going to say might come back. But anyway, oh no, he says what I was going to say that he says, and then Dave, is that he says we have to strive and aspire to help beings within our capacity. We really do have limitations as sentient beings. So it's like there's a distinction there between, like, no, I really don't have what it takes to do that. That is bigger than what I could do right now. And man, I'm just really enjoying this TV show, and I don't feel like making this phone call on behalf of some, you know, whatever it is. Like, so we try to overcome the kind of obstacle that's really just what we would call ego clinging. It's just sort of placing our own self-interest above the self-interest of somebody else. But between that and really recognizing, no, I really can't do that right now. That's something that I can't do. And he said, and I've always found this really comforting, and I've quoted it many times, he said, even Jesus couldn't fix all the problems in the world. Even the Buddha couldn't fix all the problems in the world. Even Muhammad couldn't fix all the problems in the world. So we can't expect to fix all the problems. We probably can't. I don't think we can fix any problems, honestly. I think we can just help. We can do triage. I don't think we can ever really fix anything. I mean, maybe on small scales, some problems are fixable. But it's all about just tirelessly, as much as within our capacity, putting the energy out there. You know, wish, even sometimes all we can do is wish for things to get better, wish for this person to find the help they need. Like, that's a beneficial energy too, if we don't have the physical wherewithal to do it. It shifts something for us to send that kind of energy. Maybe we do a little taking and sending, or we just really wish for that person to be free of suffering, to find the help they need. Anyway, yeah, Dave, go ahead.
I was gonna, when you were saying, you know, the before the praises, the first, I was thinking of the other one that kind of encapsulates the whole thing, which is Om Jetsun Ma Pama Dromala Chatsalo.
Yeah.
And that, Thay Sithu is saying on his teaching on that, which I'll plug, anyone can get these teachings from the monastery, just talk to Jinzon.
These are the teachings from like decades ago?
Yeah, from like,
I
think it's
there.
1987.
Yeah, I was there for those.
You were there? It's tremendous. He was so funny too.
It goes through like word by word, basically.
Yeah, but so, and he was saying that Pakma, the way he was describing it, was that she's beyond samsara and nirvana. And that's another aspect of her, like why she can, you know, is beyond anything else. She's like just totally beyond both, so she can help you in a way that nobody else can.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. Yeah, she really has these qualities. And when we do the praises, you know, if we study the praises, like when we're chanting them, sometimes it just all goes by and sometimes we're somewhat tuned out anyway. But if we take time sometimes to read through the praises, she has a lot of qualities. I mean, Stephanie was talking about some of them, about Stephanie, can you say that line again about joyous dancing?
Vanquish foes with joyful dancing.
Yeah.
And splendid joy, clad in splendid joyous.
Yeah. A lot of qualities. Some of them are wrathful qualities. Some of them might be surprising that you didn't know Tara could be wrathful and she can stomp on, you know, obstacles and so forth. It can be a bit, I don't know, surprising to read through the praises, but she can do anything. Like her capacity is unlimited. That is the nature of the awakened mind. The capacity is unlimited. Relative reality remains relative reality, and it's, you know, sometimes it's flexible and sometimes it's not, but the capacity is there if the conditions manifest. If the right conditions manifest in relative reality and things are movable, then we have the unlimited capacity to move them. And that's what we're working to get in touch with and to be able to manifest more and more that capacity. But meanwhile, we have to respect the limits of our capacity in this human unenlightened form and not be hard on ourselves if we can't fix things, even small things. We can't always fix them, but we just maintain the attitude that we would like to. If we could, we would. Yes, Bonnie.
Oh, I just wondered if you could say a little bit about the 21 Taras and the different colored Taras and how they all relate and came about.
Yeah, no.
Okay, that's fine.
it would take too much time, and I would have to look that up, basically.
Okay.
Each one, like right. When you do, like at the monastery every morning, well, every other morning, you know, they alternate two practices, and one of them is the long green Tara, which takes about an hour. And it goes through each of the Taras and, you know, what, like their color and their quality and what color vase they're holding and what other implement they're holding. And there is a lot there. And there are a couple of Western books, but they're from different traditions. Like I started reading one when we were studying Tara a long time ago. And then I realized it was not from the same tradition. Like the correspondences were not the same as in like our Tara. So I kind of abandoned that effort, but there is information out there, and you can even Google and start to find it, like information on all the different Taras and what their functions are. But for this practice, we're focusing on green Tara. This is green Tara's qualities. And we just know, I mean, it's a great question and I wish I could answer it, but it would take a lot of time to go through the Taras.
No problem.
And I'll just say that they all bring different qualities. Like there's meanings to the colors, there's meanings to the implements they hold. They all have slightly different functions. So we really, in our tradition, we really only practice green Tara and white Tara. And white Tara is kind of different, I think. I don't even know if she's one of the 21 Taras, 20 Taras that are with green Tara in this practice. I'm not sure.
Okay. It's yeah, I have white Tara on my wall.
Yes, I noticed. It looks like a beautiful white Tara too. Really lovely. Marilyn also has an incredibly beautiful white Tara. You guys are going to see it when Lama Zongmo's in D.C. If you haven't been to Palpung, D.C. before, beautiful shrine room, beautiful. And the white Tara is just stunning. I mean, I could just sit there and look at that white Tara forever. And she's tried to take pictures of it, but she says you just can't get a good picture. But just being in the presence of that Tara is amazing. But anyway, yeah, there are a lot of Taras. I mean, Tibetan Buddhism, Vajrayana Buddhism has like a manifestation for everything. It's just, you never exhaust all the possibilities of manifestation and meaning. So great question. And I'm sorry, I can't answer it better than that.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? So we're down to our last 20 minutes. And Megan, what have you got?
Do we know who wrote the 21 Praises Sadhana song?
I think it might be in here. I don't know off the top of my head, but I will let PST know if I find out, or anybody who finds that. I don't actually know. Dave, maybe you know who wrote Tara.
The origin of Tara Tantra by Taranatha kind of explains
Oh,
it.
okay.
There was a the first like when the when they had the first tantra of it, the praises were embedded in the tantra. And if you look at like in Praise of Tara, the that book,
That's a
they kind
book, yeah.
of they have that first tantra. So that's where it comes from, like
Yeah,
the
I have
first.
that book, but I don't remember. Good question though. Where did it come from? Like, we know that Chenrezig was written by Tang Tong Gyalpo, who was an amazing engineer and bridge builder and Dharma practitioner in what, 14th century Tibet, maybe something like that. But Tara, I don't know. Thanks, Dave. Anybody else? So we have about 20 minutes left. And so there's a couple of directions we can go in. I don't necessarily have anything further to say on Tara. What we could do, there are two options right now from my point of view, are we could go through the text a bit and talk about more about Tara's qualities, or we could do the practice. I kind of vote for doing the practice because it's really powerful, but I'm happy to go through the text and talk about it instead. What would be most useful to all of you? Feel free to say.
I'd like to do the practice.
Okay. Two votes for doing the practice. Anybody strongly prefer to talk more about Tara with our last 15 or 20 minutes? Going once? Oh.
We got some.
Scott,
if you're muted, you can
Yes,
say.
yes. Okay. What do you guys have to say at PST?
I would like to go through the text, but I don't want to stop doing a pra like from us doing a practice.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's see.
Lama, did you want to say the practice? Is that why you thought it would be good to do it now, or?
I don't need to say the practice. I was actually thinking. I think I emailed you guys the board last night that I think it's more meaningful to hear multiple voices chanting rather than just me chanting.
Okay, because what I was thinking is you
Yeah.
could do the practice after the time is up if you guys are up for it.
Yeah, no,
And of
that
course,
works.
you can go, because I know your time is limited. So,
Yeah. Do you
that
have
work
time?
for you guys?
You don't have to be out of there.
No.
Would that work for the rest of the people?
Okay.
3:30, Tara, and then.
Yeah, that's fine. We can talk a bit about the practice. Do you want me to screen share? I would be screen sharing the English. I'm fine with that. Dave voted for practice. Dave, are you able to stay to do the practice if they do it at 3:30?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay either way. I mean, it's
Yeah.
important.
I mean, we're
Like,
all fine. We're all
yeah.
fine either way, right? Like, there's benefit both ways. Nobody has a strong opinion, but I guess probably maybe the better use of, because you guys can practice on your own. Maybe the better use of our time together is look at the text a little bit.
Yeah.
So the question is it helpful if I screen share, which I can do? All right, let's get the screen share up there. And I do have to leave at 3:30, mostly because I have to put eye drops in my eye. Okay. Oh, I forgot to do refuge at the beginning. Sorry, let's all take a moment and retroactively think that from the beginning of this session, we have been renewing our refuge vow in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and our Bodhisattva vow to attain awakening in order to help all other beings attain awakening. I meant to do that, and I have the screen share already, but I just forgot. Okay, and as we start looking at the practice, we can also just take a moment to silently take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and renew our Bodhisattva vow as well. Oh, it's on the praises. Let's go back a little bit. Oops, there we go. Oh, you can see the screen share, right? Okay, good. Thanks for the thumbs. Okay, we're just gonna do what we can do. We're gonna skim through some of it. And if anybody has a question anytime, I'm now not gonna be able to see very well, so probably just have to unmute. Because I can't see everybody. Okay, born from the green letter Tom. So we start the practice. It's not really so much formalized here, like stage by stage. It's more formalized in Shinrezi. But Tara's letter is Tom. It's a green Tom. You can look up the Tibetan or you can just think in English, T-A-M. It's green. So most all deities really start from a seed, what we call a seed syllable. It's a certain kind of energy, like that manifests as a letter, a syllable. And in her case, it's green, her color. And she also uses this light to free beings. So not only does she manifest from the green letter Tom, but she has a Tom in her heart that is surrounded by the mantra Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha in a circle around it. And when she frees beings, when she helps beings, light goes out from that Tom to the beings who need help. And through that light, she frees them. So that's very important. Her color is green. Green is the color of activity of the four enlightened. There's four enlightened activities. There's pacifying. The color of that is white. There's enriching. The color of that is yellow. There's magnetizing. The color of that is red. So there are deities of any of those colors. Chenrezig is more in the passive. I never thought about it this way, but Chenrezig, white in color, his white signifies the pacifying mode of activity. And he's a very peaceful deity. Tara, not always so peaceful. You know, she has wrathful activity too. La Manorla always said she was both. She's a peaceful deity, but she's also a wrathful deity. And so the practice is a little more serious. Like Chenrezig, you can kind of do casually. Tara, you know, Tara, it's more important to have the empowerment, although I know we haven't had the opportunity, but you just take it a little more seriously when there's a wrathful aspect involved. Green is not so much, it doesn't mean destruction, but it means activity. It's like the activity form. So that's where her swiftness comes from, I think. Like she's just, even in her posture, we'll see, we might see that later. I don't know. We don't really go into the visualization so much in the sadhana, I think. But you can see that her right foot is slightly forward. She's not in like a really stable, solid pose. She's not in a lotus pose. She has one of her feet ready to jump up. Like she can just jump up from that pose in a second. And so that's, you know, she's an activity manifestation. That's green. Okay, but we can't necessarily say that all across the board every green deity is that and every white deity is, you know, it's like it's not that consistent, but in general it's a good rule of thumb. White is pacifying, yellow is enriching, red is magnetizing, and green is activity, like really, you know, jump out of your seat and rescue beings kind of activity. So with your retinue, please come. That is the 21 Taras. The other 20 Taras, sorry, she's the one. Okay, and then these are all just homage to her, you know, her qualities. She frees us from all need. Whatever we don't have, she helps us have it. And she's so powerful that even the gods bow down to her. The gods' realms completely bow down to her. I think they bow down to all the deities, honestly, but, you know, it's really called out here. Okay, and then, so this is the seven branch offering. We won't go through that. That's also in the Chenrezig practice. It's in many practices. Very, very important prayer. This is one to memorize. Very good one to memorize. So you could do this like any time. And also there's a short version of it, a four-line version of it that's in the prayers we chant before teachings at the monastery, where you pay respect. That's the first of the seven. Then you make offerings, real and imagined. Then you confess your faults. This is like purifying your mind stream by confessing and acknowledging, you know, all your bad deeds in the past and the future. and then, let's see, rejoicing in the merit of all deities, all Buddhas, all Bodhisattvas, all deities and all ordinary beings. We rejoice in whatever merit anyone has. And then we ask the deity of Tara in this case to continue to be with us, to continue to turn the wheel of Dharma, the deities and the Buddhas, and then to stay with us until samsara is empty, like never disappear, always be ready to help us. And then dedication of merit. So those are seven really important activities to do. And then we get into the praises. Obviously, we won't have time to do them all, but we'll just look through for some things. So, Om Jetsunma Arya Tara, I pay homage. Jetsunma means she's a realized being. It's a title. Jetsun is the male form, Jetsun the female form. And Arya means she's noble, which means she sees reality as it is. That's the distinction. Which basically means she has realized emptiness. Okay, and heroic, not deterred by any hardship, according to Lama Tsering. This first verse is not one of the 21 praises. It's a preliminary verse, and it just speaks to the qualities of her mantra. It's Om Tare Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. All these capitalized things, those are part of her mantra. And it just talks about like the quality of each one. Tare is connected with her being swift and heroic. Tu Tare with dispelling fear. That's also like what she's really known for, like traditionally, is dispelling the eight great fears. And the eight great fears, you can read about them on Wikipedia. You can read them in the Tara book by Bokar Rinpoche. We don't necessarily relate to, it's like elephants and snakes and stuff like that, but they're all also symbolic. We won't try to go into those now, but when you're feeling fear, like that is really the time, that's Tara's specialty. If you're feeling fear or if you're threatened, that's her really special domain. So that's a good time to call on Tara. Is something happening there in the shrine room? Or are you just looking at the Tonga? Okay, with Tara, Ture, you benefit us, and with Soha, we bow down to you. So this is just, it's an homage to her mantra, the power of her mantra. Okay, so we'll now look at a few of her qualities. So again, swift and courageous, that's heroic and courageous, I think are pretty similar. Okay, eyes like instant flash of lightning, that just speaks to how quick and powerful she is. Okay, born from triple world protectors, open faces. I think, I'm not going to get into her origin story. That refers to her origin story. Face that glows, she gives off light. Face that glows with light like hundreds of full moons in autumn. Like that's the, you know, we might use some other metaphor for light in our culture, but for the Tibetans, you know, back in whatever century this was, like the moon, like the full moon is a powerful source of light. And so to try to convey how bright she is, how much light she gives off, they like stack up, oh, there's my alarm, stack up. It's like a stack of moons, like the combined power of hundreds of full moons. In autumn, the autumn moon is, you know, I think even we recognize the autumn full moon is pretty special. Full moons in autumn, they'll have names. Blazingly resplendent. She's just giving off light. 10,000 stars in union, just radiating light. That's an aspect of Tara I think we can relate to in our lives. Like we can just give off light because we do. We can tune into that. We can consciously radiate light. We can radiate white light like Shinrazy. We can radiate green light like Tara. Just, you know, sending that energy out into the world to benefit beings. And that's an easy way to be Tara. Like we talk sometimes about, like you can just be Tara, like in the world, just be Tara in your daily life. And it can feel like that could be a lot of work, but you could just let your light shine, be a beacon as, was it that, I think the 17th Karmapa might have said, we can just be a beacon in the world, even if we can't provide other help, be a beacon. So this is the beacon we want to be, like hundreds of full moons in autumn. Okay, we won't look at this one except that, right, generosity. This is the six, I think this is the six paramitas here. Her domain is the six paramitas, generosity, ethics, patience, basically the same, patience, diligence, and meditation. And then wisdom is just inherent. Wisdom's the other one. And here again, the paramitas are mentioned. She embodies the six paramitas. Okay, seven worlds your feet can trample, all invoking with your power. This is the wrathful aspect starting to come in. Like she's not just all, how do they say it? Something in light. You know, she's not just a peaceful deity, but she can manifest with some wrath behind her if needed in a situation. It's the wrath of compassion, but sometimes you need that. to cut through a situation that peacefulness does not cut through. But it's no less compassionate for being wrathful. Okay, homage, all gods venerate you. We'll leave that one there. Demons, zombies, and Gandharvas, all of these beings that are considered negative, like they bow down to her, they venerate her too, which means she has power over them. She can conquer those. They will do her bidding. So that's what we're invoking when we ask Tara for help, like, you know, conquer these demons that are coming after me, or that are, you know, within me, that I'm feeling within me, that I'm dealing with right now. They all bow down to Tara, to the Tara energy. Tran Pei, you overcome all hostile forces on a raging fire blazing. There's some more wrathful energy, all kinds of power, ferocious, vanquishing all Mara's demons, a scowling lotus face, slay all foes without exception. We know foes are not the people who bug us. She's not going to slay them. She's going to slay that energy. She's going to pacify, perhaps with a very active method, that energy. And it's the energy of the negative emotions. Like that's just like in our first verse of our dedication. The real enemy is our anger and our jealousy and our ego pride and our ignorance and so forth. That's the kind of energy that she's, you know, incinerating and trampling upon and slaying. This is all symbolic. You use fingers, so she's at the three jewels, mudra, etc. Okay, direct dazzling self-illumination, all directions radiating. That's a little profound, like self-illumination is the quality of nature of mind. It illuminates itself. So she's radiating awakening in all directions here. Again, sparkling, more light, so many light metaphors here. Light garlands, laughter. I love that about Tara. She does all of this very joyfully. All of her wrathful activity is done with great joy, subjugating worlds of demons. She's just laughing through it all. Okay, with your might, you summon all the local earth. So it's considered that, you know, in the Tibetan cosmology, like we have local gods who control weather and stuff like that. And that's, you know, amazingly, like certain lamas can control, they have relationships with these local deities. I mean, we saw Lama Norla control the weather any number of times. I mean, it was just, it's sort of unbelievable, but he could change the weather. Jean and Bruce may be able to speak to that too, but all kinds of things. He once appears to have gotten rid of a tornado in Wappingers Falls, and he definitely kept it from snowing. You know, every all around us, there was like a lot of snow, and we didn't get any at the monastery, like because we were digging to build a new building. It had to not snow. We needed the ground not to freeze and it not to snow. This really happened. I mean, I was there. Okay, blazing again, more light, more fire, more moon. Moon is like a mysterious thing, right? She's also got association with the moon, and that was her name, Yeshedawa. Moon of wisdom. She's got some moon qualities, you know, in astrology, you know, Western, you know, sort of Western spiritual traditions, moon has certain qualities and she has those too. Okay, more unceasing light, more apocalyptic fire. Oh, here it is. Vanquish foes with joyful dancing. Stephanie's line. Okay, frowning, more wrathful energy, frowning with feet stamping, both palms, earth surface, fierce, and some really powerful energy. With the letter hung, the seven underworlds annihilating. The seven underworlds must have some, you know, troublesome aspects. And so when she has to conquer those troublesome aspects, she does it by frowning. Like frowning doesn't cut it here, I think. It's just a very wrathful look. And the literal word they use is frowning, but it's, you know, it's quite a frown with feet stamping. Yeah, bliss and peace. Okay, bliss and peace. And this is my personal favorite line in the Tibetan. Homage, bliss and peace and virtue. You embody true nirvana, nirvana being the completely awakened state. Utterly with omens so high you obliterate great evil. Okay, vanquish every, with joyful allies, vanquish every adversary, Right. Liberate with your 10 lighters. You who shake three worlds and mountains. That's how much power she has with 2 feet striking, stamping. That's, again, her wrathful energy manifesting. Okay. The rabbit moon. The rabbit moon and the celestial gods, like, those are metaphors for the moon. I mean, it says rabbit moon, but the moon is considered to be a rabbit. We have the man in the moon, and the Tibetans have the rabbit moon. It's just reference to the moon, the one who holds the moon. Okay, every poison dispelling. Tibetans, as we've discussed before, Tibetans were, they poisoned each other, apparently. That's what you did to your enemies. You poisoned them. So, you know, Tara being able to dispel the effects of poison, huge, huge in Tibet. We might not have that so much, but we have pollution. We have environmental pollution. Same thing. We have our own kinds of poison. So we could think of her, like, when we are really worrying about the environment and climate change, we can put Tara to work on that. We can ask Tara to help with that. Doesn't hurt to ask. Okay, honored by various, you know, people. Okay, discord, strife, and nightmares clearing. So that's, she's doing all of this stuff to clear away the turmoil and clear away all the obstacles to peace, all the obstacles to our seeing things the way they are. Dispelling it all. Again, eyes bright, shining with vast sun and moonlight. Sun and moon being very powerful symbols. It covers everything. The sun and the moon, the qualities of the sun and the moon, that covers everything, right? Symbolically, at least. Dispel fierce epidemics. I particularly relish this line during the COVID years. We can ask for Tara's help with that. And you bring healing, peace. So that, now we're back to the peaceful. You know, this one has peaceful and wrathful. Through your threefold suchness, I think I would say, I mean, this is a profound line too, your threefold suchness. I would, off the top of my head, I would say that that's a reference to the three kayas, probably the three dimensions of Buddhahood, the threefold ways that things exist. We're going to talk more about the three kayas later. You bring healing, peace, and stillness. That's what we need. In the turmoil of the world, in the turmoil of our own mind, we can ask Tara for help. When our mind is turbulent, we can ask Tara. She brings healing, peace, and stillness. Swift and vivid, again, swift, vivid, another evocation of light. Supreme Ture, you defeat all harmful spirits. And that's the other thing Tibetans really fixated on, poison and harmful spirits. And Sarah Harding recently, some of you may have seen it, she recently, like a few months ago, gave a talk on Chö, because she had a book coming out about Machik Labdrin. It's a very well-known translator and longtime Dharma practitioner. And she said Tibetans, the thing that Tibetans were most afraid of was unseen beings. Like, they really felt that the world and their experience was permeated with unseen potentially harmful spirits. That's what Guru Rinpoche vanquished when he came. Like, Buddhism couldn't take hold in Tibet in the 8th century. Like, a realized teacher couldn't do it. You needed, you know, Guru Rinpoche's ability to vanquish these harmful unseen beings, these harmful spirits. So poison and harmful spirits. So that's it. That was a really whirlwind tour of the praises, and then the benefits. These you can study. We won't read through them, but a lot of promises are made here. And I think these are, we in the West recognize these, and I'm sure in Tibet too. They didn't take them literally, but a lot of promises are made. Like, if we do the practice of Tara regularly, it will help us in many, many ways. And I think that that's the message to take away from it. Again, we have poison, dispels the strongest poison if you do these praises. Every wish will be fulfilled. Tibetans speak in hyperbole, but there's a truth to it. So we don't want to discount it. We want to take it with the grain of salt. Like, oh no, it's not, you know, it's like it's said that any being, any animal that hears Om Mani Padme Hum once will become Buddha, will be awakened. It's not going to happen right away. It's just planting the seed. So doing this practice plants the seed for all of these things to happen. And how do all of these things happen? We become awakened. We are no longer suffering. We're no longer bothered by stuff that happens to us. So I think that's ultimately the meaning of the benefits section. We do a little dedication here. This short dedication is done at the end of most practices, at least in the Kagyu lineage. We pray that that this practice will be accomplished. May all the aspirations of the Tara practice be accomplished, and may all beings become Tara. And it's at the end of Chenrezig too. May all beings become Chenrezig through my practicing this. May Chenrezig be accomplished. May all beings be freed from suffering. May all beings become Chenrezig. You know, the more we can tune into the meaning, the more powerful our practice is. And then some various aspirations and celebrations of Tara, which we won't go into now because they're out of time. But these are all beautiful verses and full of meaning. So I hope the whirlwind was of some help. Oh, do we have a question, Paupung?
Yes. Hopefully you can cover this briefly, and if not, it's fine. I was wondering generally, because a lot of sadhanas have seven branch prayers. What are the seven branches in particular? Like, I've never had that explained.
I just went through them. Watch the recording.
Oh, never mind then. I'm sorry.
The first one is homage, paying respect. The second one is offerings. The third one is confessing. The fourth one is rejoicing in merit. The fifth one is asking that the wheel of Dharma continue to be turned, that Buddhism, the Buddha's teachings continue to be available. The fifth one is asking the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, the deities not to abandon us before samsara is emptied. And the fifth one is dedication.
Gotcha. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. I zone out during when I'm listening to stuff to you. I'm not saying you zoned out, but you know, you just may not be connecting it with what I said at that time.
I most likely did zone out.
Yeah, I zone out too. Like, you can't zone out when you're actually like leading a workshop. Although sometimes I lose my train of thought, right? Okay, yeah, thanks for the question, Patrick. It is an important practice and there's lots on it. You can probably find a Wikipedia article on the seven branches. Wikipedia is a great source. I mean, I don't know if they're always 100% accurate, but their articles on various aspects of Buddhism are really good. So I recommend Googling and using Wikipedia. And this book, I'm sure, has a section on the seven branch prayer. Very good to understand what that means. So it's a great question. Yes, Macon.
I have a mnemonic device for remembering the seven branches.
You do?
It doesn't really make sense, but it just helps me remember. It's back on Cleveland's royal wallet, something died. So that's bow, offer, confess, wheel, stay. We wish for them to stay, and then dedicate.
Okay, and everybody could come up with their own mnemonic device. I'm a great believer in mnemonic devices, like things like that that help you remember lists. Thank you, Macon. All right, I have to go put drops in my eyes, so I'm going to have to say goodbye now. Thank you all for coming. I thought this was really fun. I love Tara. And thank you all for sharing your experience with Tara.
Hop back in if you want to, after your eye drops, please hop back in if you want to practice with us.
Maybe I'll do that. I have time. My granddaughter was supposed to come, but she's sick today, so she's not coming. Hi, Basil and Wyatt. Oh, it's Wyatt's chat on top of Basil's square. So hi to Basil, but thank you for the comment, Wyatt. All right, I'm going to go, and I'm just going to turn off my video and audio, and I'll try to come back. And if anybody needs to leave, of course, it's fine. Wait, does everybody have the text? Because somebody's going to probably have to screen share. I was going to screen share.
It's on our website.
Oh, okay. So if you don't have the text, are you doing Tibetan or English?
What would you like to do? What would y'all like to do, Tibetan? Could we do like? Are we gonna do three praises, three full praises?
If you don't have time, doing one praise is fine. Like whatever you feel like you have time for.
Okay, we'll probably do Tibetan, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so if anybody does not have a text, you can go to the website, the same one you joined this Zoom through, and where would they find it?
It's on the front. It's on the front page in the schedule of practice.
On the home page in the schedule of practice, there's a link to the text. So you can be looking at that on your screen. All right. Bye, Curtis. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, Lama. Thank you.
Thank you.
just want to mention I have to go back to work, so see you guys next Thursday. Thank you.
Bye, Lily.
Bye, Lily.
See you.
Thank
you.
So you can say, that's your...
Hey, I do kind of need to go at 4 though, so I wonder, maybe you probably need to
go.
Oh,
okay.
Wow,
I can say, but I don't have my reading glasses, so it would... I can say, you don't get my glasses. I could go get my, I think my glasses are
coming. Well, if you want to.
Yeah, because Stephanie said she has to leave at 4, so it's coming.
Oh.
Did you say you have to leave at 4?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be back.
Doesn't give us a lot of time. Hey, Megan.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing pretty good. I'm, like, really sleepy today. Like, inexplicably sleepy.
Oh, is it warmer there today?
A little bit. A little bit. My apartment's, like, pretty warm. I got these old, like, steam radiators. I actually have to, like, crack the window so it doesn't, like, stay too warm.
Oh, what I was going to say, the first time I went up to the monastery in New York, I think it was for Lama Tsering, and either Lama Tsering or Lama Marjol, I'm looking at you, but anyways, they gave, like, really in-depth teachings on the Seven Bridge.
Right? Oh, okay, cool.
So deep that it was, like, these are so important that, like, actually the whole practice path is encapsulated within the Seven Branch.
I missed it. I missed that teaching.
Hinduism loves to do that, where it's like, this one, actually, if we only did these 4 lines, or
this is
these
actually,
2 words.
Well, don't they say something about how, like, the entire Dharma is inside just Om Ahum?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And then Om Ahum ends up with a Bhimma City home, then we're like, oh, okay.
I like how there's, like, a lot of different flavors, so it can, like, you know, different people are drawn to different aspects of it or different parts, and so there's a lot of different bow offer
ways to approach according to the different capacities of beings.
I'm always obsessed in particular with just, like, the textual aspects.
Oh, my bad, sorry.
The textual aspects, like you
had
the lists and the...
Oh, in the
back on
like
Cleveland's
like,
royal wallet,
the structural features of the sadhanas, things that they have in common with each other.
I'm gonna write this
cetera,
down.
And also of sutra texts, et cetera, and, you know, tantric texts, et cetera, all the organizations for, like, really any of those, but, you know, I haven't looked at them, but
yeah, that makes sense, knowing your brain in the way that I have it. It's highly technical. Mm-hmm. You need to really absorb vast amounts of information, sort, remember, categorize. Do you see that in yourself?
Yeah, no, I definitely see it as one of my biggest strengths, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is this a job interview?
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah.
Oh, you're back. Would you like to unsay, or would you rather us do it? Mama Linda?
Yeah, why don't you guys do it? It's just nice to hear your voices, if you're up for that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You good?
Go ahead, Jean. Oh. Yeah, thank you. I have to leave a little bit quicker, so I will scoot away, but I'll be here.
Can somebody take the
demo? Yeah, I was just writing it down.
Yes,
I just wanted to remember.
Something
dying.
I just wanted to remember.
Of course, Megan, the musician, going to have lots of mnemonics.
Okay, let's see. No, I'm gonna blue to it.
Is that too bright?
Yeah.
It is too bright?
No. I just hit the bed.
Sanjay Chidam Sochi Chognam Junction of Bagley of Bagley Chelsea Bagley Chelsea Pay Sonam Chi Yola Penchir Sanjay Chibar Show Sanjay Chidam Sochi Chognam Chungchu Bhaktu Dagni Chapsi Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pe So Nam Chi Drola Pen Chi Sanje Chi Par Sho Sanje Chi Dong So Chi Cho Nam La Chungchu Bhaktu Dagni Chapsi Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pe So Nam Chi Chola and cheers, Hanje to Marsho. O Tala ye nature, Tang ye junku le junshin, Tang ye chi to wajo, Choma korte che su so, Ta dang la min chu benji, Chop chi pe mo la tu ne. Pong la jung ne cho tse ma, cho ma yung la cha sa lo, che tsung pa ma jo ma kong, cho chi tu sung chu pa yi, cha wa se che tam che la, kun ne dong we cha chi yo, ne to tu pu mar me ji, cha se wo mo la so pa, No joy chi chu me bo, pa me so chi she su so, to ma me ne ta te bar, mi ge chu dong sa me na, sam ni nyang wang wang chur pe, dik pa tam che sha par ji, yin tu rang chau chang chu sam, so so che wo la so pe, Tu song ge wa chi sa te, su nam la ni da yi rang, sem chen nam chi sam ba dam, lo yi che cha chi ta wa, che chung tan mang te pa yi, che chi kor lo kor du so, kor wa chi si ma tong ba, Yang yin min da du jie yi, du niang zhang so jin wa yi, sem chen nam la zi su so, da ki se nam chi sa la, tam che zhang chu jir jir ne, ring bor mi tok jo wa yi, jen pe pao du da jir chi. Om Jesun Ma Pama Jo Ma La Cha Sa Lo Cha Sa Tare Nyer Ma Pama Tu Tara Yi Chik Pa Sel Ma Tare Tung Kun Jin Pe Jo Ma So A Yi Ke Chu La Du Do Cha Sa Jo Ma Nyer Ma Pama Jin Yi Ke Chik La Dung Drama Chik Tung Sung Gun Chu Che Shil Chi Ke Sa Che Wa Le Ni Jo Ma Cha sa tun ke ta wa kun tu kong ha cha ni sik pe shel ma karma tong drak suk pa nam chi rak tu che we u ra par ma cha sa ser me chu me che chi pe me cha ni nam par jen ma jim pa sun dru ka tup chi wa su pa sun tu chu yung yi ma cha sa te shen che pe su tor ta ye nam par ja war chu ma Malu paro chimpato pe jawe se chi shin tu ten ma Chasa tu tara un yi ge Tu dam chu dam nam ka kam ma Chri tin dun bo shab chi nen te lupa me pa ku par nu ma Chasa ja jin me la sang ba lum la na so sang chik chu ma Jumbo romam tri sanam tam, nyujin sa chi tu ne tu ma,
Shop chin and day, may buy to buy to barma.
Oh, Dari to a soul. Om Gewadi Nirtuta Amadro Madhukjurne Gewadi Changmaluha Te Isala Guparsho Jetsam Chumden Gema Tukjajan Jatam Tayesem Chantam Chichi Pekne Jangshin Tsongin Yerzome So pe sanje to parse du so Te ma to ki se rakum tu yam La tam mi de wa cho to me Tam che chen pa tu par che pa la Par che tum ke grim tam le la so Tu min chi wa chur pa da so tam Milang nian dang zhen ma nian pa dang Jie pa jie so mie wa zhe wa na Nian du shi xing mie pa zhe du so Jie ten le ni de pa yi Jia shi de le pun sung su pa na Pel xing jie pa de nam ma lu pa Pehme lunji drupa tse dusa Drupa sun ching dang shu belwa dang Tatu chu dru shao cho tong wa dang Tong yi dun to kyang sem rin po che Yang yo da tar bel shing che par se Jia wei chu por dang ching ga wa de Pemo dang pa shim tu se le che Dang wa ta ye jo we nun sun de Lung ten pa yang da ki ter to sho Da ki se ra nyan de ju pe la Tu sun san je kun ji ten le ma No jang shil chi cha ni nyar shi ma Yung-jur-pa-nam-pe-cha-si-sho Jula tu shing so wa ta pe tu Da so kam na ne pe sa cho tu Ne dun hu pong tap su shi wa tang Chu tang cha shi pe war tse du so Tu yi chen pang sen chang ke te den Sanggi chen pang ka la ping kya yang Tu chi chen pang che cha da da che Cha shi pao bar ma ye cha shi cho think, should we skip the next one? Because we've been here a long time. The prayer of origin.
It's fine to skip it.
Because we've just been long with this meeting. Yeah. So to page 33. Who's following on screen? Jumpa Pawa Chita Chimpa Kutu Zampo De Yang De Shinde De Da Kunchi Jesu Da Lo Chin Ke Wa Di Da Tam Che Da Tu No Ke Wa Di Yi Che Wo Kum Su Nam Ye She Sok Sok Ne So nam ye she le jung we tam pa kun yi to par sho san je gu sung ye pe jing ma tam chun yi ming jir den pe jing ma tam gen den mi che dung pe jing ma chi chi tar ho wa mun lam tu par sho Par non se chu chi coro jur Cater domna tempatum so so Hilsar yum tog zu chen nam na yi Aso sitar ne shing je jur chi And we will soon have the updated Ritara, Pecha, and English, and Tibetan with the extra prayers, which weren't in our text that we have here, Koji. So, sorry for, you probably got kind of confused because I think you all have the extra prayers. So,
I got my old text.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the old text, actually, in a new jacket, but. Yeah,
got my really, really old text from probably 1980 or so, yeah. Whenever it was put together.
Yeah.
So we're still recording.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I mean, maybe it's nice to have the practice on there.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
All righty.
Very much in the recording.
No, not that.
Oh, wait.
Wait, stop recording.
I don't know how to stop it.
I think it's, yeah, there it is.